Today I want to ask a series of questions, and this is the main theme. Is this how you can live to be 120 and healthy? But first, let me tell you, I like certainty. I like to know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen, and I want to know all the consequences of things before I undertake anything. So that's really important to me. Now, is that valuable? I don't know. Life is filled with tremendous amount of uncertainty. There are a lot of things that we cannot be certain of. Now, I'm certain that I awoke today, but really I could say, well, I'm certain that I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning. But, you know, I'm only saying that. Sometimes people go to bed and don't wake up the next day. I think the point of beliefs is that we create beliefs to give ourselves more certainty. This is up, this is down, this is left, this is right, or I'm on a boat. This is the port, this is the starboard, this is the stern, this is the bow. And the purposes of certainty in a lot of cases seems to be to create a sense of security. Oh, I just made up a belief, now I feel more secure. Is the belief accurate? I can't deal with that question, but I feel more secure because I've made up this belief. In addition to security, I think a lot of things include comfort and convenience as the purposes behind creating a set of beliefs. My belief is this. Now that I believe in gravity, I know that it's more convenient for me to carry eggs from the refrigerator to the stove more carefully because I believe gravity exists, and if I were to let go of these eggs mid-journey from refrigerator to stove, they might end up on the floor broken. The trouble with certainty, even though I like it and a lot of people like it, I gotta be certain. The trouble is that we stop seeking. Well, I know this to be true, period, end of story. That's the end of the conversation. We stop reaching for answers because we are certain that we know the answers already. Another problem is that our proclamations of certainty, when we're in a conversation with other people, can actually make other people insecure, especially because we're so certain, and now all of a sudden their certainty is different than our certainty, and if we're so dogmatic, so clear, so powerfully committed to our own, they could go, you know what, I'm insecure. And now we run into their resistance. Asking questions, reaching for answers, being open to the awareness that is arriving second by second, all of that are better for us and, frankly, less threatening to other people. Ask a question of somebody else, you can see them open up, brighten up right away because they're being validated on the other hand, and they are getting an opportunity to express what they believe or maybe an opinion. They're not certain of it, but they would be willing to voice it to somebody who is sincerely asking a question. If you're in a situation, say a cocktail party or any other social event, and you ask questions sincerely, you'll recognize that you have just started a connection between you and other people, and maybe even the energy pattern of the topic that's being asked about. Now, all of a sudden, you can gain awareness because you've asked a question. Maybe this other person has a greater degree of familiarity or experience or skill or knowledge of the topic that you just asked about. And that connection between you and that person and you and that topic now improves. I don't know for sure how to live to be 120 and healthy. I have not done it. I don't know anybody who has. I am certain of this, that the way we think, feel, speak, and act directly and dramatically affects how we manifest our own lives. If you want to know about your own life, I think you could go, it is a symptom of how we think, feel, speak, and act. I'm certain of that. Whether you are or not, that's another story. You're going to have to determine that for yourself. And this is one of the wonders of allowing other people to have their own degrees of certainty, their own beliefs. This is what I believe. You don't have to believe it. You don't have to accept it. You know, this is a good way to approach things, I think, in order to facilitate communication and connection between other people. I am certain that growth, which I'll consider to be the opposite of death, growth is necessary for us to live to be 120 and healthy. Reaching out with a positive expectancy and certainly an openness, just asking a question and refusing to listen to the answer, not so good. So that positive expectancy and an openness based on trust that we will be able to have our needs fulfilled in the face of any form of uncertainty, that to me seems to be essential. We're not going to eliminate stress from our lives. We're not going to eliminate uncertainty from our lives. But what we can do is believe in and develop our own abilities to deal with uncertainty, to deal with stress, to deal with the unknowns that we're going to inevitably face in life. So, with those thoughts in mind, I'm going to pose some questions for you and me to consider. Maybe the questions and maybe the answers that occur to you and me will be important to us living to be 120 and healthy. I want to know, do you have to know how to facilitate your own growth? If growth is so essential to our healthy living, successful living, happy living, do you have to know how to facilitate your own growth spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically? And in order to work, do you need to know how to facilitate the growth of others? Your children, your friends, your family, customers, employees, clients. Do you have to heal your relationships with your family members, those that are still in physical form and those who have died? Do you have to heal those relationships? Do you have to upgrade your understanding and experience of this power that you and I typically in English will refer to as God? Do we have to reduce our fear of it? And do we have to increase our trust and our reliance on it? Do you have to shift your mindset from a fixed mindset to being in a growth mindset, where we have an appreciation for our ability to acquire, receive awareness and the resources and the support and the energy that we need in order to achieve whatever it is? Or do we hold on to, I was born with a certain amount of fill in the blank, and that's it. Once that's used up, or if I need more than that, I don't have it. I have to take it from somebody else, or I am out of luck. Do you have to heal your beliefs about your own physical body and develop a new respect and willingness to attend to and appreciate all of it? Over the years, it seems kind of amazing, but because it happens all the time, it doesn't seem so amazing to me anymore, is people have really awful relationships with some or all of their body parts. Their hair, their nose, their eyebrows, their forehead, their ears, their lips, their teeth, their eyes, their smile, their lack of a smile, their chin, their neck, shoulders, arms, breasts, stomachs, butts, their genital organs, their legs, their feet, their on and on and on. It is amazing how we don't work to develop a better relationship and acceptance of these unique aspects of each of us. Do you have to reevaluate your experiences in your life to, in my language, mine for gold? If you consider life as a gold mine, and you go, oh no, I just only saw the rocks, I only saw the dirt, I only saw the difficulty, I only saw the hard pan, right? Do we have to reevaluate how we do that? And then mine for gold in order to release the, well, how about the hasty and often negative judgments that we made in the heat of the moment when we're having an energy exchange experience. Oftentimes, those energy exchange experiences occurred when we were most under stress and in the presence of people who were under tremendous levels of stress. And we make a decision right then and there. We're bad, we can't, we're this, we're that, we're unable, and we make up those things and we hold on to them. But if we reevaluate them and go, whoa, just because I made this interpretation and this conclusion about me and life and others when I was 4 or 5 or 2 or 10, why would I want to continue my life governed by these rules that clearly I shouldn't have been making at that age, limited awareness under tremendous stress, and so on? If we reevaluate those, will we free ourselves from the prison of our own interpretation and judgments, not only our own, but those made by other people, when they are least able to make those kind of things lovingly, kindly, or accurately? Can you heal past experiences of not being able to protect yourself so that you can shed the energy of victimhood and being without control? A lot of times we say, you know, the difference between me in that situation was I didn't have enough control. I should have been able to control more. And when we fall into that trap of believing that control keeps us safe, we will then inevitably try to increase our control over other people, the weather, every single situation. And again, that sounds like, I got to have more certainty that I am safe and I can control everything. We're not going to be able to do it. If we were not able to protect ourselves because we were in the presence of somebody more powerful, bigger, stronger, more authoritative than we were when we were young, or even when we weren't young, now is the time to reevaluate it and recognize that those people were acting from their ego needs or their own insecurities, and they're trying to dominate and control and overwhelm us in order to feel safe. They were doing what they were doing in order to feel safe. Didn't make us bad people. Didn't make them bad people. But if we understand what they were operating from, it can give us a greater degree of freedom to be able to release those past experiences and the interpretations and judgments we've attached to them. Can you approach vulnerability when you feel it instead of, I'm a little anxious, and then run away or fight it? Can you go, I'm feeling vulnerable, I'm going to lean into it instead of run away. I'm going to lean into it instead of fighting it or making it wrong. Oh, I didn't need that. That was unimportant. That's how we go into the big circle in order to minimize the importance of something to us. Oftentimes, we're just lying to ourselves and maybe trying to convince other people that something that's important is not really important. And consequently, that's why we're not engaging with it. Can we change our approach to vulnerability? Have you considered the need for disclosure instead of being burdened and held back by secrets? Secrets about you, secrets about your family members, secrets about what you did and didn't do, secrets about what they did and didn't do. Holding on to these energies that are very heavy, potentially toxic, that need to move, just like all energy needs to move, have you considered the need for disclosure? Disclosing it to yourself is a huge step in the direction of health. Write it out. Tell yourself the truth. Instead of, I can't tell myself the truth. Yes. Do you have to see these two ideas, creating and expressing, in a totally new way in order to gain health and happiness? If you think of that, this power that we call God, I like the definition, there are many of them, Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth, but one of these is, this is a creative, loving, intelligent power. You and I are fashioned, we've drawn our being from this ocean, this soup, this commodity, this energy, creative, loving, intelligent power. And it wants to create and it wants to express. So do you, so do I. And do we have to really see that in a new way in order to give ourselves permission to be able to take the brakes off so we can gain health and happiness? Of the fundamental energy processes of life, do you have to remove the impediments put in place by the interpretations that you in the past have, based upon your past energy exchange experiences, put there? Oh, life is hard. Whoa, wait a minute. There are difficulties in life, no question about it, but life itself is it joyous? Sure. When it's joyous, it's joyous. When it's difficult, it's difficult. When it's uncertain, it's uncertain. When it's exciting, it's exciting. When it's scary, it's scary. So we have all these different definitions of life. These characteristics are true. So now you say, huh. These beliefs, which are the impediments, my inability, that's made up. That is totally made up, your inability. We start to consider ourselves as individuals. Like, I am 6 feet tall, I'm 210 pounds, and my arm length is 35 inches, when I'm buying a shirt, and my waist size is, and my shoe size is. That's not the sum total of me or my potential. Neither are those dimensions really an accurate reflection of your potential. We have an amazing amount of creative, expressive, loving, intelligent power available in us, for us, and it can flow through us. Do you need to change a habit of critical judgment of yourself and of others so that you can become free of the negatives that grow from judgment? If we're, the law of cause and effect says, we're going to reap what we sow. So if we're judgmental, critical of the next door neighbor or somebody else or something else, you go, I'm planting seeds of negative judgment, planting seeds of negative judgment. And then it becomes a surprise to me. Oh my goodness, how come this negative stuff is occurring in my life? We reap what we sow. And overcoming this negative judgment of ourselves, just because we experienced at one point, maybe we thought of it ourselves, by we compared ourselves to somebody else, or somebody else compared us to them and didn't like the comparison. Uh-oh, you're more beautiful than me. And that's a Snow White fairy tale situation all over again, right? The green, like, I can't have that. I can't have somebody more beautiful than me. Why? Exactly. There's no real good, valid answer for that. If somebody is more beautiful than us, they're more beautiful than us. But that's only one aspect of who we really are. That's like, saying a ring size. Oh, your ring size is 8? Oh, my goodness, that makes you what? It makes you have a ring size of 8. It doesn't make you better or worse than anybody else on the planet. So if we've gotten that judgment, we've been judged, or we hold ourselves back because we continually judge ourselves in comparison to other. Oh, I'm not as good looking as Tom Cruise. I'm not as good looking as Brad Pitt. I'm not as good looking as Christy Brinkley. I'm not as good looking as Angelina Jolie. Okay, well, what has that got to do with anything? Oh, good point. We're not supposed to look like them. They look like them. We look like us. need to become aware that what you think about yourself, your abilities, and your value in the world can all be upgraded. It's like, it's too late in my life. I'm 30, I'm 40, I'm 50, I'm 60, I'm 70, I'm 80, I'm 90. Wait a minute. Why would you get to the point where you think you can't be upgraded? People know now, scientists, because they've proven this, that people in their 90s can affect their brain's ability to process information. And they developed this whole area called neuroplasticity. And they take 90-year-old people and they put hand weights in their hands and say, here, exercise. And then they measure them and go, oh my God, I didn't know that a 90-year-old person can actually build muscle mass. Yes, we can. We can upgrade our bodies, we can upgrade our minds, we can upgrade our emotions, and we can upgrade our spiritual connections. Do you need to have your fingers and your toes more connected to Mother Earth in order to get back in balance or maintain balance if you're already in balance? This is the person who's got their toes in the dirt because they're out in the farm field or they're in their own gardens or they're sticking their fingers into the soil and allowing the energy of the earth to bring us back into balance. They're either, the Mother Earth is either drawing from us or giving to us the energy that will make us more connected to the ultimate electromagnetic mass in our lives, which is the earth. And when you think about it, you go, hey, you know what? My bones are made out of stuff that came out of the dirt or the water. My blood, my eyes, my ears, my hair, my skin, my fingernails, my everything has come out of what's been extracted from Mother Earth, including the water on her surface. Like, so we go in out of balance, and we go, this has nothing to do with Mother Earth. Has everything to do with Mother Earth. And when you look at people who have lived years and years and years, you will notice that they tend to be connected to Mother Earth. Some years ago, I went to Cuba. I'm in the Hotel Nacional in Havana. And somebody I was with, there were four of us, said, there's something on the wall over here you'd be really interested in. I said, oh, that's cool. I got off my bar stool and walked around the corner, and they had the pictures of the oldest living people in Cuba on the wall. And it explained what they did for a living with one or two words. Farmer, farmer, housekeeper, farmer, farmer, housekeeper, farmer, farmer, housekeeper. These people were dealing with Mother Earth in levels that no office worker is doing while they're working in the office. Nobody in the high-rise is connected to Mother Earth like those people were. And it became very clear to me that this principle of having our fingers and or toes in Mother Earth are essential. I was in Freeport in Bahamas on vacation with Marianne and her son Carmen. And Carmen got up to watch the sunrise early in the morning on a regular basis and told us about it the first day. And so we did it too. And there we were. We brought folding chairs down to the water's edge, put our feet in the sand underwater, and watched the sunrise. Connected to Mother Earth, watching the birth of a new day. I went, this is a sacrament in the Church of the Healing Spirit. Having your feet in the water, buried in the sand, and watching the sunrise. Doing the same thing for a sunset, obviously required being on a different side of the island to be able to see the sunset while my feet were dug into the sand underwater. That's another sacrament. The end of the day, this blessed day. And I know, I'm pretty certain that that sun is going to rise tomorrow in essentially that same place. Do you need to accept your sexual thoughts and urges without necessarily acting upon them? This is a normal part of human life, even though many of us have been told, oh, that's dirty, don't think that way, don't have those feelings, that's evil, that's a Satan, that's sinful, that's the devil, and whatever, whatever. Funny that the people making all those proclamations turn out to be having sex with children and other people, even though they've committed to not. They're either married or they're have sworn to be celibate. But if we have these sexual thoughts and sexual urges, it's like, I'm human, and we let them go. I'm human. It's when we resist these things that we can run into problems. Years ago, a friend gave me a book talking about nice people and how dangerous nice people are. And that was the book. I forget the title exactly. But it's these people that are so, I gotta be nice. I have a limited range of what I can express. I must be nice. So all the normal human, that pisses me off, they couldn't experience that. And what happened over time is that these people would explode. They would explode into rage and serial killing and just all kinds of awful things, simply because they never were allowed, or didn't allow themselves at that point, because they're adults, didn't allow for the release of that energy. They were like pressure cookers with no escape valve. They just, gotta stop it. And that resistance to their humanity, their normal human sexual urges, made it go and toxify. And when it exploded in terrible ways. When you look at your experiences in life, do you have to heal those experiences in which you feel as though you miscreated or you misexpressed? You did something you shouldn't have done. You created something you shouldn't have created. You said something you shouldn't have said. Do you think you need to heal those? Or do you just want to carry those energies around on your back, on your heart, on your mind? Everybody likes rules, especially those of us who like certainty and security. That's really what rules are made for, right? And to control other people. But do you need to learn a new set of rules for life? Here's one. You are guaranteed success if you will continue to reach for what you want without creating resistance in yourself and others. That's a rule that I've developed through experience, of course, and I watched somebody do it, and it became clear to me that that's what she was doing. She continued to reach for what she wanted without creating resistance in herself or in me, and I facilitated her having it. It was a customer, a client from the UK. And it became clear to me, this is really the name of the game. If we can continue to do that, reach for what you want without creating resistance in yourself and others, it's a guarantee of success. Why? Because I'm going to continue to reach for it, going to continue to reach for it. Most of us will go, I'll reach for it, I can't have that. Which is resistance in us, or they don't want me to have it. Resistance in them. We made it up in both cases. But not only that rule, that's just one, but other rules. We're following somebody's rules. Certain rules, of course, for society's sake, good idea. Don't drive 80 miles an hour through a school zone on a school day. That's probably a good rule. Stop at red lights. That's a good rule. Stop at stop signs. That's a good rule. Signal before you turn. That's a good rule. I like slower traffic, move right. That's a convenient rule. But you need to determine. Maybe you have to make up a new set of rules. But certainly you can learn a new set of rules by looking at your own experience and recognize that when you're following a rule that doesn't work, it's time to create a rule that does work. Do you need to shift from a mindset of judging in a binary fashion, such as it's good or it's bad, it's right or it's wrong, it's good or it's evil, and so on. The logo for Live to Be 120 and Healthy has a stylized figure of a person in gray, because I believe a person who sees things in the binary white, black and white, good or bad, is doomed, because it makes us go into resistance too often. It makes us reject too often, because there are only two choices, good or bad. It's like, no, there aren't. There is a whole set of gray. And this ability to ask questions, when we start looking at nuances and looking at the shading of various experiences, we have all kinds of new things going on. Instead of this good, bad, right, wrong, black, white, do you need to live by a different framework? I made up the scale of effectiveness. 0 to 100, horizontal scale, 50 in the middle. We're trying to be effective because it feels good to be effective. If we can be effective at creating desirable results, we're going to feel better about ourselves and life and others. Instead of, oop, that was wrong. Oop, that was bad. Oop, that was right. Oop, that was good. Oop, that was bad. I was more effective, oop, a little less effective. Still effective, not as much as I desire. If I were to modify this thought, this feeling, this word, this action, I could be more effective. And it takes some of the pain of being wrong away, which, of course, we will grow if we're not in pain. Pain makes us pull back, go into self-protection, go back into into our turtle-like shell. In the actions we consider and we take, do we need to realize that we're gathering information in order to increase our awareness? Just think of that. If you're going to do anything after listening to this talk, make a sandwich, bake a cake, go outside, go for a walk, pull weeds from around your flowers, go for a drive, anything. If you realize you're gathering information so you can become more aware, and rather than you're trying to do things perfectly, I'm going to be perfect at pulling the weeds from around the flowers. The chance of doing that are mighty, mighty slim. It's like, yeah. It takes some of the pressure off. We're gaining awareness. So if in a new project, you've never done it before, it's like, I got to do this perfectly. How are you going to do it perfectly? You've never done it before. Oh, good point. What should I be doing? You should be trying to gain awareness. So as you're learning, as you're doing, I know how to do this. That was easy. That was difficult. Oh, yeah. And now all of a sudden we become students. We're receiving awareness because we're open to it, as compared to, I'm on this tightrope of perfection. If I don't do this right, I fall into the abyss of what? Hell or damnation, or I have to beat myself up? No. Give that up. Gather information so you can become more aware. Do you need to adopt the viewpoint that your job is creating and expressing in order to determine the what and the why? The what and the why. That's an important concept. You decide what and why. What and why. What do you want? What do you want to happen? What do you want to create? What do you want to express? That's what you need to be focused on, in my opinion. Consider it. And the how and the where and the when, allow that to arrive. Your job, what and why, not the how, the when, the where. And this is a challenge for a lot of people. Do you need to ask for and accept help? Now, in emergency situations where our lives are in danger, it's pretty regularly, dear God, help, 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 which brought up the statement in the military. I don't know when it started, probably World War I, if not earlier. There were no atheists in the foxhole. Why? Because people will reach out for help and protection and fulfillment of need. And who are you going to reach for when you're in a foxhole? Person next to you? Yep. People who manufacture the bullets and the guns that you have in your hands? Yep. But primarily, this power we refer to as God, this creative, loving, intelligent power, always available because it's everywhere. It's in us, around us. It's everywhere. Ask for help is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength. It's a sign of awareness. It's a sign of courage. It's certainly a sign of intelligence. It's like, oh, I don't want help. I'm just going to suffer and struggle here on my own. Yeah, you sure that's a smart thing to do? I don't know if it is or not, but I'm going to do that because that's how we do it in our family. Okay, yep. I would think that bloodline is pretty short, actually, not living to be 120 and healthy. Do you have to understand that asking for help is the same as providing opportunities to other people to distribute high vibration to you and to others, and for us and them to develop the sense of what's possible and your own deservingness? Over the years with clients, oh, I don't want to ask for help. I don't want to ask for help. You're only thinking of yourself. You're not thinking of the person who is looking for an opportunity to be helpful. This is one of the ways we express our effectiveness, by helping other people grow. And if you don't provide that opportunity, you think you're being noble or something. No. You're holding back. You're harming yourself and you're disadvantaging other people. Maybe that's a thing you have to learn. Do you know that all rejection is actually self-rejection? All disapproval is self-disapproval. That is my opinion. That is my rule. You have to consider that. Does this make sense to you? Look at it. When people are disapproving, where's that disapproval coming from? They've internalized it, and now they're sharing it with you or with others. Oh, and their judgments, critical judgments, it was internal to them, and they're sharing it with you or others. You bet. I think that's exactly how it works. Do you need to elevate your reactions in situations where you don't get what you want? I think this is a tremendously important question, particularly for people starting a relationship. How does the other person react when they don't get what they want? Do they become belligerent? Do they become victims? Do they become, you fill in the blank, withdrawn, sullen, unkind? Fill in the blank. You're going to want to know that in a relationship, and you're going to want to know that about yourself. Do you need to understand how some environmental signals, which ones, I don't know, but you need to understand them, perhaps, that send you into fear and knock you out of balance? Some people go along, and you see them in a situation that you go, wow, I am surprised that doesn't knock you out of balance. I've had employers who said that to me when things went to hell in a handbasket. They were amazed at how calm and collected I was. I said, well, in those situations, I am. But in other situations, I go out of balance and, you know, become really, really difficult. That's a whole different thing. But depending on the circumstance, if we understand that, we go like, oh. So let me process the underlying experience that I had when I was young that leads me to react positively, stay in balance, or the one that knocks me out of balance and drives me into a temper tantrum. But if we understand that, do you think we would be better off? Do you understand and recognize how your beliefs shaped your identity in each of the 12 worlds that I refer to? Spiritual, mental, emotional, physical, family, career, financial, social, leisure, community, political, and maintenance. If you consider those 12 aspects, and you've got an identity, your spiritual identity is different than the identity when you're sitting around the table with your family, at a Thanksgiving or a birthday party or a picnic in the summertime, or when you're in work environment, or when you're in a social environment, or when you're just hanging out leisurely. Your beliefs about you and others in those various environments shape your identity. If we primarily manage matter, energy, space, and time in life, do you know which areas give you the greatest satisfaction and which areas give you the greatest discomfort? Look around. Matter, solid stuff, energy, not solid stuff, space, geographical environment, and time. Some people are habitually late. Oh, I'm late, I'm late, I'm late. Why? Because they've held on to that belief. And maybe there are other purposes, but we can know it and we can change it. Do you know that the structures of your identity and your personality are based upon what you've been told by yourself and by other people? I'm pretty, I'm not pretty. I'm smart, I'm not smart. I'm good, I'm not good. I'm kind, I'm not kind. Depending on what we've been told and what we've accepted in the telling, we've shaped our identity and personality accordingly. Do you know that change, and primarily growth, is possible no matter what your age is, no matter what your physical condition is, no matter what your financial condition is, no matter what? Do you touch yourself enough? Your partner. Does your partner touch you enough? This is the area of human physical contact. Being hugged. Parent-child. Or sexual. Partners, lovers. Is it permissible for you to have physical pleasure? How much? How little? We learned this. Somebody told us this. Oh, don't touch there. Don't touch yourself there. Oh, no. You know, all kinds of bad things will happen to the planet if that happens. Are you aware that orgasms under the right conditions are how human beings touch the divine? Christ in Christ Returns reveals startling truth, speaks to this issue. It's absolutely fascinating. Do you know which things in life that you love to be, you love to do, you love to have? Above all, what do you want to create in your life from this point on? First, you're going to have to overcome that, oh, it's too late, I'm 30, I'm 40, I'm 60, I'm 90. But what do you want to create from this point on? How do you want to grow? How do you want to express? On scales of 0 to 10, do you know how high your will and purpose are regarding what you want to create and express in any of the 12 worlds that are important to you? You could look at any one of them, say the career world. 0 to 10, how high is your will to achieve something? How high is your purpose to achieve something? And you go, not too high, not too high. And then you could recognize what's holding you back are beliefs. Oh, I'm too old. No, you're not. I'm too this. No, you're not. I'm not enough of that. No, you're not. What are you most afraid of in the 12 worlds? I talk to a lot of people. I tend not to take them as clients who are afraid of God. I was bad. I'm going to be punished. I'm not obedient enough. Okay. But what are you most afraid of in the 12 worlds? And do you know which of your beliefs, that if you change those beliefs, would give you the greatest changes, the greatest relief, the greatest freedom in your own life? You have these beliefs about yourself. You have them about life, about what's possible, about other people, even about God. And do they need to be changed? Talk about the physical stuff, about eating. This is a big deal, right? Do you need to learn how to prepare and eat smaller portions at all of your meals? That's not really the energy that is going to sustain us. It is not the stuff on our plate is the real energy that we need. It's how we think and feel and speak and act about what we're eating. So the portions can be smaller, and then we have good feelings because we showed a little teeny bit of discipline. Do you need to increase your confidence to share plates in restaurants? I can recall being out to dinner and it's like, oh, I think they expect me to order an entree. I better order an entree. You know, the strangers are waiting on me in a strange restaurant, and I'm going to eat according to whatever makes them comfortable. That takes some confidence. And after a while, it's like, no. They're willing to accept anything as long as you pay the check at the end of the meal. So sharing meals, sharing salads, sharing appetizers is a wonderful way to control portion size and to give yourself greater pleasure because you have more flavors in a given period of time in a meal in a restaurant. Do you need to habituate the fork down approach to eating as compared to using it as a shovel? Put the fork down after you put food in your mouth. Enjoy the food in your mouth as you're chewing it. It's not chew, chew, swallow. It's chew, chew, enjoy, 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 enjoy. As many enjoys as you can manage. And then swallow and pick the fork up and do it again. Do you appreciate exercising as a form of creating and expressing as compared to it being a chore, impossible or difficult or, oh, gee, walking around the block is like climbing Mount Everest? No, it's not. No, it's not. It's made up, of course. And you go, oh, I'm moving my energy, I'm moving my body, and I'm helping the cells of my body in this exercising because they're getting the electricity they need in order to reproduce healthy cells. And I'm expressing my physicality. And I'm seeing stuff as I walk around the block. And I'm taking in energy, and I'm taking in, and I'm learning to appreciate this yard and those flowers and that tree and this sidewalk and that dog and this cloud. Yeah. Are you willing to address what has to be managed in your life as matter, energy, space, and time? We've got to come to terms with this. Well, in order to live to be 120 and healthy anyway, that's my belief. I have my eyes closed. I'm not going to notice it. Yeah, you're already thinking about it. That's why you have your eye closed, right? Can you identify the areas you refuse to address and those areas in which you typically procrastinate? I'm going to get to this in, a decade or two. Okay. And it's beliefs that hold us back. It's energy patterns that are the impediments that we put there, maybe with the help of others, but they're there, and we can dissolve them. Are you aware of the need to move in life with much less resistance? Much less resistance. And it is this resistance, which is another form of rejection, that we can overcome just through change. And so this is what we'd want to work on. If you consider those kind of questions, some of them may be interesting to you. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.